There's questions because I said the beginning of the talk about the DN theories, but
I'm sorry.
You might want to just put that in your pocket, or don't need to hold
it. Does it not have a little clip?
You might have put it too.
So this is based on a paper by myself and Doug Whistler. So basically the objects that I want to discuss are 4D n equals 2 SCSTs. When one studies the gauge coupling modular space of these theories, one finds gauge coupling modular space has cusps. I'm going to show you this in this example in a bit. So you can see them as points where the gauge coupling state screen values, so they tend to zero or to infinity. So at some of these coupling, the theory is infinitely strongly coupled. Alright, so we're worried about these cusps where the couplings take values that are very big. But there exist alternative descriptions where this infinitely strongly coupled theory becomes a very weakly coupled theory. So this is what we call this dual frame. The furnace dual frame. And my question is how do we find them? So we're saying that these points where the theory becomes very strong coupled are can actually be described by an alternative theory, by an alternative possible Lagrangian theory, that where now the couplings are very, very weak. So the examples to keep in mind, let me give you two examples. First one is SU2 gauge theory with four players. So here we have one marginal coupling. It's basically the coupling associated to this SU2. And to write it more explicitly, this. So it's a complex coupling that combines the theta angle and the actual coupling G. So here we have S value transformations that relate the theory at different values of tau. So it's tau identified as negative number of tau and tau. These form an SO2Z group. So this means that we don't need to worry about the theory. So we should understand that tau is a marginal coupling. So its beta function is zero, and so it doesn't run in the RG. So it means we can tune into whatever we want, and we're actually being with abruption in the quantum theory. And so this is telling us that we don't need to worry about all possible values of tau. In fact, we only need to worry about this fundamental region. So this is a fundamental region, and this is a space of tau. So whereas normally you would have called every point in the upper half plane a different theory, the theory a different value of Hitchcockian, these transformations tell you that only these are actually different theories, encoded theories. All right, and the second example that I'd like to have in mind is SU3 and SU6 theory. So it may seem like I'm just going off, but you see that this is a qualitative is somewhat different. So here the S2LE transformations are a little different. These form a different subgroup, that's actually a subgroup of SF2Z. And here we can write a sort of a fundamental region for it too. So this is a space of tau, and have this circle here. Now the fundamental region, the space of an equivalent tau, is a little bigger than before. So so this is the fundamental region now. Okay. So, well, tau is very high up in the at infinity in the imaginary axis. Then here we have a weakly coupled cups. So here that the tau when tau goes to just tau going to I infinity. So here the G is that's the first point, so the point. So you can see that point as being the point at infinity in the complex plane. Here, this weakly coupled cusp is also there. But now there's this other one here. It's touching the point where the imaginary part of tau is zero, which means that G is very big. So this is strongly coupled. So these we can limits of the theory we can describe for regression theory. This we don't know what it would be. That's exactly what I want to deal with. Right. So a key observation is that this region of the tau space is actually, this is something that's in principle totally unrelated to this. This is exactly the same as the space of complex structures of the sphere with four punctures. These are four identical functions. So we don't, they're not labeled, just they're perfectly named. So if we try to compute the modular space of complex structures of this, then we're gonna get back this. In this case, this fundamental region of gauge couplings is actually the same as the space of complex structures again a sphere, but now we have again four punctures, but two types of punctures. So again, these two are identical to each other, these two are the same too, but otherwise these two sets are different types. So if we compute the space of complex structures of this, then we get this fundamental region.
Can you also remind us what is the group for general n? Like SUN is an F to
the
n.
Right. This is also an example of an SCFT. Right now, I don't. Maybe. Actually, it's this.
It's the same.
Yeah, it's the same. So this gives you a clue about what's going to happen. But first, let me explain what happens to the strongly coupled point. This was studied by Argyris and Cyber. So what this paper says is that SU3 and N equals 6 at the strongly coupled cusp is equivalent to an SU2 gauging of the E6 SCFT plus matter in the 1,2 of SU2 at very weak coupling. So what Argyris and Cyber are telling us is that you can understand this as being also the space the modular space of gauge couplings for this alternative description of the theory, but we're here, this is weak and this is strong. So reverse roles in that for this theory. This E6 SCFT is supposed to be a non-Lagrangian SCFT, and very little is known about it. But I think Argyris said a few words about it in last week or so. But we see that this theory shows up here. This is the fixed point of the RT. That doesn't have a gauge coupling that you can put. Let me try to put all these things together in just one framework. And that's what Davide Gallardo did. So Gallardo is saying that these two theories are examples of a more general construction. So the idea is to start with a 6D n equals 2,0 theory type A n. So this is a low energy theory when you put a bunch of n5 rings, parallel n5 rings. And so if you compactify this on a Riemann surface. So when I say Riemann surface, now for this example, you should think about these two surfaces, these two spheres that are up here. On a Riemann surface with punctures, I call this C, G, N. G is the genus of the surface, and N is the number of punctures. But certainly, I should also tell you how many punctures of each type I'm including in the surface. As you see here, I'm going to need a function of different types.
Sorry to interrupt, by the way, what was the box short?
Sorry? Oh, there's
no box short.
Oh, thank you. So this 6D theory I'm going to compactify on the Riemann surface to obtain a 4D n equals 2 SCFT, just like the ones that are in these two examples. So this thing has 16 supercharges. Normally, when you compactify something like this, say only the torus has translations, but a generic Riemann surface will break supersymmetry. So you need to add a twist that will let you preserve 8 supercharges, which is what this n equals 2 CFT has.
And by compactify, you mean you're going to throw away massive moles?
Yeah, sure. Those are fine application.
but not really fields decline. You're just trying, you're compactifying and throwing away the massive moles. Your reduction.
Okay, yes.
Is it a dimensional reduction? Mm. Or you're genuinely going to treat it as a six-dimensional theory?
Compactification, actually. Not dimensional reduction, but...
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, the torus has a little more symmetry, has transition symmetry, basically flat, right? As opposed to the sphere or heterogeneous surfaces. So if you compactify on a torus, then you get 4d equals 4 square units. So that's a special case. But in general, you get something just n equals 2 square units. It's pretty much.
What is the types of punctures? So can I just take an SU3 case again, just since the same type of punctures, what do I get then?
If
instead of 2 and 2, I just choose 4 of the same type. Why is it inconsistent? Or what does
That would make perfect sense. I'll show you that when I show you exactly what classifies a puncture. So
there is no restriction. I can choose any puncture, you're saying.
No.
Any number, any type, or is there any restriction?
There are restrictions. There are restrictions. But your example is just for of it would have to be just want to head on a little. It would have to be four of this type. Four of this type wouldn't be allowed. So the examples are really up here, right? The SU2 and n equals 4 theory is just the A1 theory on the surface that I drew up there. And SU3 with n equals 6 is the A2 theory on the other sphere. All right, so... to see more is my objective our objective in the paper was to classify all the possible 4D theories that you could obtain and their possible S-dual frames. By S-dual frames I mean that if in some descriptive theory I go to a very strongly coupled point, then what is the alternative weakly coupled theory that describes that strongly coupled point. So I want to do that for every possible thing that you can do there. Of course, the definition is already given here, but so my work is basically classifying what you can possibly get. So, so let's see briefly these generations of SU3 and SU6, which is the second example that I gave here. This has two degenerations. To show that, I should pull out this case first.
It's up there.
Oh, thank you. I should first tell you what I'm gonna do with this. So, let me raise the title for a second. The fact that here there's just one cusp and here there are two cusps corresponds to the fact that here I can degenerate this in basically only one way. By colliding these two punctures and I create a long tube in the surface. That's the only way I can do this because the four punctures are identical. So if I collide the other two, then I'm going to get basically the same thing. But here, there are two ways I can do that. I can collide one of these punctures with one of these. And here, I can collide two of these. So these are really different ways one can degenerate the surface. So according to whether you have different types of punctures, then there can be more or fewer ways to degenerate. And basically, that corresponds to the different cusps in the modular space. So let me write that more clearly by stating the dictionary. And I'll give explicit examples of how this works. On one hand, I have the theory, the actual SCFT. On the other hand, I have the Riemann surface. So the modular space marginal couplings that we already saw. That's that is equivalent to the modular space of complex structures. Of the surface. Cusp is equivalent to a degeneration of the surface. The S-duality group can be identified with the fundamental group of surface. The Zeidler-Quicken curve identified with an n-sheeted cover of the surface. And we know this Zeidler-Quicken curve explicitly for any of these theories by a formula that I'm going to give in a bit, a second. So given by certain K differentials. So K differentials are just differentials on the defined on the that have as their base the Riemann surface. 5K, K going from 2 to N on CGN. Okay. So there are these K differentials that are going to play a role in explicitly giving me what the Zeidler-Quicken curve of these theories are, and a few more things. The graded Coulomb branch. So the Coulomb branch, the Coulomb branch is parametrized by beds of the scalars and vector multiples, and they can have the actual gauge invariant parameters can have various dimensions. So the number of parameters of each dimension, that's what I'm calling the graded Coulomb branch. So that's equivalent to the graded vector space of K differentials. So these are going to be differentials. I'm going to explain this a bit more in a bit. So these are K differentials with prescribed Paul orders at each puncture. So there's basically only so many coefficients that you can have in the numerator of these K differentials, and that's the vector space of all those parameters is what's gonna can be identified with the Coulomb branch. And even when you turn on mass parameters and the theory, so these are mass deformations. You can describe that. You can describe the Zeidler-Quicken curve and stuff, everything, by assigning labels to the punctures. So instead of having, say, here four identical punctures, now I label them, call them 1, 2, 3, 4, so to say, and I can perfectly describe that to you. So this is information about the conformal point, so the theory at the conformal point. And this is information about the low energy theory, the effective theory at a generic point in the Coulomb branch.
When you talk about this duality, do you also include passes which start and end on punctures or only closed curves? When you write phi 1 of C, G, N, do you look at passes which starts and ends on punctures, or you only look at closed curves?
It should be closed curves.
I'm only asking, I don't know.
Right. No, that's a good question. I think that's a fundamental group of something else. Maybe I didn't write this correctly. So this might be a different object because I guess the Riemann surface itself only a torus would have a non-trivial pi one there. The sphere wouldn't. So,
it's punctured, so it would have a non-trivial pi one.
It could. I don't want to say that's. I don't want to say I'm sure that's the right way to say it. But
in this U3 example, can you just draw the passes which are the basis which you use for this, so that to be clear?
Well,
here we
just a circle running around
any three, just circles around it. You don't. But why don't you consider passes which start on one punch and end? Why don't?
I don't know why not, but if you do, you'll get more than
a three-dimensional view. Yes, but how do you choose?
There wouldn't be elements of pi 1.
Okay. I'm asking not about pi, but about this duality. Why do you know that a duality has something to do only with closed curves, as opposed to also curves which starts on puncture and then ends on another puncture? That's all I'm asking.
Yes, but I don't, well, the...
So maybe the question is, what does that mean?
It's an
yes. Yeah, like I said, I don't know for sure right now, but I'm almost sure that that's just not the pi one on C, but an object associated to C, which I can't recall it. But yeah, I mean the homotopy group is based only on closed paths, so you don't really have open paths, and I don't think the puncture is really well, they do have a zero. Yeah, I'll just leave that.
So can I just ask what you mean by it? Is a K differential something with a pole or a K, or what do you just mean a K differential part of the canonical one?
Oh, no, I mean that's something with a DZK, where Z is a coordinate on the remote. It's an actual K differential. And, yeah, they go up to N.
Why does it start at 2 or 1?
These are supposed to be associated to what parameterizes the Coulomb branch. I don't think you can construct invariants that go as, so everything that's in the phi k is going to go as mass to k. So essentially you have these, well, now this represents a scalar, an eigenscalar, so yeah, so you don't get that. If you had a what I want to say, what one represents that's not correct. For example, an SUN H theory would have parameters of mass dimensions 2, 3, 4 up to n. These are the exponents of SUN. You just never have one. Right. So let me show you how you can. Let's start with the generations of SU3 and SU6, which, as I mentioned right here, are just two. So, in the first case, we're generating the sphere in this way, and here you have an SU3 base group, and this is supposed to represent 3, 3. This is more or less the picture that we want to get. We have As we decompose this into two spheres connected by a long cylinder, the gauge group, should be associated to the cylinder, and we may have hypers on each sphere. So this is SU3 in SU6, right? I'm repeating because the SU frame is going to be involved the SD6 or CFP. So once you degenerate completely, then you end up with three puncture spheres. And these two three puncture spheres are the same, because they're two spheres with two functions this type and one of that type. And these two punctures appear once you completely degenerate the initial surface. The other way of seeing.
What is the distinction between the two types of punctures?
This and this?
Yes.
I'll show you in a second. That's a crucial point. I just want to write this before I do this, but I will answer your question in a second. So here we have two of these and two of these. So for now we're just thinking that they're different types, but I'll actually say what's different between them. So here there's an SU2 gauging of the E6 theory. So we think of this as being the fundamental hyper that's here, this matter, and the other sphere as being the actual E6 SCFT. So when you do the actual total generation of this, then you have an SU2, and here you have three of these, and two of these, and here something that I'm going to call, I'm going to denote with the same symbol, but with a prime, because it's not quite the same. If it were the same, then you would get an SU3 cylinder, whereas here you get an SU2. So assuming that you could study all possible examples and you actually figured out what the SU frames are and figured out what the cylinders are and you decompose everything, then you can extract the building blocks. For, in this case, A2 theories. So this is an A2 example. So we have punctures. So we already saw that we have this puncture here. This funny one. These two I'm going to call regular. And I have this third puncture that showed up here that I hadn't seen before. So this is a irregular puncture. So just by looking at this example, we don't really know that this is everything we can possibly get, but it is actually, because this A2 theory is simple. For higher AN, for A4, A5, and so on, there are more punctures. These are all the punctures that will show up. So I wrote punctures, that's one ingredient. Second ingredient would be the cylinders, which are things that connect the spheres. So we just had two. SU3. And this other one, SU2. Again, we've only studied one example, but these are going to be all cylinders that will appear in the and these are A2 views. And then we have fixtures. Fixtures are just a word that I use for three functions. You know, you can take a Riemann surface of genus 5 and put as many functions as you want. You can always decompose it into a bunch of spheres connected by cylinders. So that's why I'm reducing to these minimal blocks. So here we have these. Three fixtures. This is 3 by 3. This is the E6 CFP. And this is 1. So we see that we get 3 hypers in some cases. Like in this one and this one. And we can also get interacting CFPs of the type that we mentioned there. None of the random is CFPs.
Wait, so far this is just A2.
Sorry?
So far this is just A2.
This is A2. Right, I'm not going to do all the A's. but I want to show you one specific example of how you classify things these labels, building blocks. The punctures, cylinders, and fixtures. That's all we need. So let me just say now what are actually these punctures. So for the regular punctures, which in this case would be this simple puncture and this other type of puncture, but not this kind of puncture, these are classified by partitions of M. Here I'm referring to the A(n-1). So if in A2, I would be looking at partitions of 3. So Young diagrams with 3 boxes, basically. So I have this. This is going to be the puncture that I denoted by this symbol. It's going to be this. And the total anti-symmetric Young diagram corresponds to something that doesn't really play a role, and you can forget about it. So you only have these 2 punctures. Okay, this is just a list, but they're going to have a number of properties, which is why I'm leaving the space here. Well, this is the right here, the regular puncture. We just have just a prime. And there's a reason why I'm using the same symbols here. So
but how do you count? Sorry, it's still not clear. Like, I'm looking at this picture with 1 dot and 2 dotted circles, and how do I know it's 3 times 3 cubed?
Oh, at this point you don't know yet. I can tell you how to count these things later. We have a formula for that, but at this point I'm just trying to deduce this from just by knowing what this theory is. We know that SU3 with 6 flavors is super conformal, and we know that its modular space with H couplings is the same as the modular space of complex structures of a sphere with these two different types of functions. So that's all I know so far, and I'm trying to associate different objects in the theory to objects in the.
Oh, you just read off from this. You're saying that it has to be that because it comes from there. Okay.
Yes.
Sorry, I should probably know this one. When you say number of planes, you mean a particular representation?
Yeah, I have 3 and the 3 of SU3. And another 3 and the 3 of SU3. So that's, when I say n equals 6, I mean 6. N equals 6 means 6 in the fundamental of SU3. That's what I meant.
Right. So the Young diagram, I mean, what we're in, et cetera, is sometimes I mean
the young guy. Yeah, what about these? Sorry? Those classify the types of punctures. So this corresponds to a certain Venn diagram, this corresponds to a certain Venn diagram, this to another, and this to another Venn diagram.
And did you meant by prime, the prime here was the conjugate diagram, was that what you meant?
No, by prime I mean that what I'm calling regular punctures are classified by Young diagrams, but the irregular ones are not classified by Young diagrams, but we'll see that they're actually sort of Higgs versions of the regular ones. So you can see them as Higgs with some mass deformation parameters constraint.
Don't you get them by colliding regular punctures? You collide to regular and you get the regular, no?
Irregular?
Yeah.
Just like here? Here I collided these two and I got this regular puncture.
So you are saying that this dotted circle, this prime, arises as colliding of these dots, just two dots?
Yeah. Two dots of this type. If I had collided two of this type, then I'll take another one of the same type as these two.
Oh, this picture specifically tells you that. Okay.
Right. When you study the properties, so punctures are not just... So this is what labels them, but they're gonna have a number of properties, a number of quantities associated to them. So you'll see that this puncture doesn't have the same properties as this or this puncture. So you have to give it a different name. But again, when you study further, you realize that it's this and this guy's, but constrained in a certain way. Right. So, okay. So, to tell you more information about the punctures, let me tell you how to compute this logarithmic curve of this these series. The k differential that I mentioned before. But now I'm going to tell you how to write them down explicitly. This lambda is x dz, so it's a one differential. It's a zero written one. So the differential is one. So you see that this is an n differential, and each term is also an n differential. So you can get this whole thing to the equation. The coordinate on the curve. So the phi k is going to be some polynomial. And here we basically have the functions on the surface. So here we're talking about some random surface with whatever genus and punctures here, which can be a different type. So you can have some here, I don't know, whatever you want. These phi k's are k differentials. We have a dz k here, and they diverge at the positions of the punctures. So here we have z minus za, where za are the positions of the punctures, so z1, z2, and so on. And this is, here there's a pa, a denotes the function. And k is just the number here. And k goes from 2 to n. So there's going to be n minus 1 of these k differentials, and they diverge of the functions with certain poles. Now these poles are part of information that's specific to each function. So the function with just one single dot doesn't have certain holes at each certain pole orders at each differential, first differential, and this other type of function would have other poles. So let me write down what those poles would be.
P A of K R, partitions of K R, something.
The speed?
I know the lower one, the end.
Oh, these are numbers. These are numbers that I'm gonna write down up here, and I'm gonna lift this up so that you can compare. So the P K's. So this just means P K goes from 2 to 1. So it's P 2, P 3, P N, N minus 1 numbers. And so this has 1, 2, because we're in the, this example is in the A2 theory, so we have, A3 theory, so we have two of these, two differentials, we have pi 2 and pi 3, 1, 1. This will give you a 0, 0, which is why you don't really take it into account, because it just doesn't show up in the differential, so I'm going to ignore now. And this irregular function has one, three. So you start to see here that it's a bit different from the others, but there are going to be even more quantities that you can compute for each function that, and you can see that they're all different. Anyway, those numbers go up here. See? So if you have, say, your function with your sphere with these, then this is going to be a product of four numbers, four z minus z1, z minus two, up to z minus z4. And the powers are going to be given by the type of functions. So that tells you what those numbers up there tell you what these numbers are. And P, the P that I wrote here, it's just an example. So P Z is a polynomial in Z of degree negative 2k plus some other functions. So what this means is that these same poles tell you what the degree of this polynomial should be. This is kind of obvious because when z goes to infinity, this thing should behave as 1 over z to k. So this is just saying that the polynomial should be such that the what you get when z tends to infinity is something of this type. Right. So okay. So what this is saying is that I can basically grab any surface.
Sorry, why does that degree depend on the genus of the surface?
Oh, it does. Sorry. I forgot the problem. But yeah, I think there's a 1 minus g factor here. But it does depend on the g. Sorry, this is a formula for the sphere when g equals 0. But yeah, yes. That's it. Yeah, but what this is basically saying is that you can write this algorithm curve for any of these, for any Riemann surface. For the theory corresponding to any surface with whatever functions you put on. So we start to see the computational power of this way of understanding this set of 48 angles. Yes. Just to let you know what else you can compute here, I'm going to write very fast. Other quantities that are as totally invariant. So these are, this A and C coefficients are conformal domain coefficients, and they you can compute them by knowing the number of hypers and vectors in the theory. And they're supposed to be S duality variants. So if you have something with two Lagrangian S dual frames, so you're sure about the two frames, then you could compute these two numbers and you would get the same answer. In the case where you have stuff like this E6 SCFT, then you get answers for the, you get the A and C coefficients for the E6 SCFT, which you can check against something else, some different way of computing. And just to show you, so there's expressions for this NB and NH. Again, this is a formula for the sphere. So there's quite a factor of 1-g here. But what I'm trying to show here is that we have expressions for everything. NH is -0.n. A runs with punctures.
And what do you mean by conformal anomaly coefficients?
Sorry
for. I can write it from there. So,
I just meant to say that we have formulas for all this stuff. For how to compute NB, NH, which are just this you know, the Lagrangian theory means actually a number of vector multiples, number of hypermultiples. But if you have an S dual frame where you have something like this, which is an E6 SCFT, then these numbers don't really mean that, but they're just effective numbers. An effective number of vectors, effective number of hypers. But these quantities make more sense here. Okay, so for instance, in the so to tell you the kind of information that we can get from here. For instance, you can find that this is an example. So you can find that this sphere, now using the diagonal notation for the punctures, that this three puncture sphere shows up, and using all the formulas that you have, you can compute what you want for it. For example, you discover this has a Coulomb branch parameter of dimension 4. So this is what this means. So this means that this must be an interaction with CFT. Just like the E6 theory, but not the E6 theory. You can compute the conformal anomaly coefficients. You can compute the global symmetry group that this has. Well, I didn't write it there, but you can associate a specific global symmetry group associated with each function. Here, this is an SU3, U1, and here's an SU2. So if you have a sphere, say, with whatever number of functions there, the product of the groups of the global symmetry groups associated to each function is going to be a subgroup of the actual global symmetry group. So, for example, here I have three punctures. I can look up what the global symmetry groups associated to each puncture are is, and I will find that it's SU4, U1. So, for example, this SU4 comes from this puncture. The other SU4 comes from the puncture, and the U1 comes from this. So this is a naive global symmetry group, but this, and strictly speaking, can be just a subgroup of the actual global symmetry group. In fact, you discover here that the actual global symmetry group is SU10.
How do you see that?
There's more than one way, but one easy way is to couple this to other stuff, to another sphere, then. Find a different generation of the resulting surface that gets you Lagrangian theory, and there it's easier to compute the global symmetry.
Okay, so you always go to Lagrangians to read off global symmetry.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you cannot say it.
Yeah. For example, in the SU2 n equals 4, which was an A1 example of 4 n equals spheres. Here, so the global symmetry group associated to each puncture is an SU2. So you would think that the global symmetry group is SU2 to the 4. But this actually is a subgroup of the actual
But this is not a good example, right? You never see this SOA ever in any generation. You don't see SOA.
You don't see it from the point of view of the sphere, but since you know the Lagrangian for this, then you know what the actual global symmetry group is.
Well, in that sense.
Yeah. So here, one way of doing that is to go to a couple this to something else, find a Lagrangian S dual frame, compute stuff there, and then go back and match things. And you probably need to do that more than once to see what the actual global symmetry group is. So this will be an interacting SCFP that you get in this frame, and of course you get a bunch of these. Some fixtures are just free hypers. Some of them will be interacting SCFPs as this one, and there are others that are interacting SCFPs plus free hypers. Yes. Oh, okay. This is actually the last thing I want to say. Okay. So to finish, one last thing that we are able to get after doing all the specifications of finding infinite series of these values. So this is a generalization. This example that I'm going to write here. This generalizes the two examples that I gave at the beginning. Here, for any n, you can write something with these two spheres. You can find that these are connect two spheres that each represent three hypers, but once connected, so it's a gauge theory. So this is SUn with n equals 20. And by taking the other degeneration, which means playing this with this and this with this, and here there will be other punctures that, well, we do know, but I'm pretty sure right now. So these are two are dual frames of each other. So this would be an SU2 gauging of an interacting theory with this global symmetry group. Plus this matter components. And we can, for instance, compute the A and C coefficients for these. And for instance, if you want to be sure that these numbers are, that everything is right, you can take the large n limit and ask. These coefficients can be computed in ADS-CFT. So you can try to compute them and verify this. But we have other series like this one. At n equals 2, this just becomes itself. At n equals 3, this thing becomes the E6. Theory and so on, but this is an intense series. I guess I never mentioned, I never really talked about like regular punctures, but they're really fixed versions of the regular puncture, so that's also understood. Thanks.
It's time for questions. Well, this is probably just background, so I apologize because you want to tell them a bit more. I understand that if you have this list of data, namely these integers that you're associating with the functions and the FCM diagram, then you can read up all this impressive stuff about them. But where did you get the list of data from? Who told you that? So, for example, at one point we had a certain type of puncture, say, with circle rounded, and you drew a Young diagram and you gave me some integers. How do I know that those are the right integers to be assigned to these?
Well, at each AN, there's at least one case, which is like a family of cases that are well understood, and those are the linear quivers. So for linear quivers, which are basically a gauge theory, Lagrangian gauge theory with a product of SU gauge quivers, you know the matter content of that, and you even know this other Whitman curve of that. So that, all that has been studied by the standard methods. So you know that one. Well, I would say this is one example. It's a whole family of examples. But that correspond to particular examples of this. Well, there you can play as much as you want with degenerating spheres and finding cylinders there. Then you can study a general sphere with any four punctures. And So you have to count the number to count the dimensions of the Coulomb branch and find the number of things there that let you guess what the right cylinder would be, and then you make some consistent checks.
So the number pk associated to a puncture, how is this written in general in terms of data of Young tuple?
Oh, there's a description for that based on the length of the rows.
Oh, okay.
There's a rule for that.
Okay. Any further questions? Let's thank Oscar again.
Thank you.